You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is Wednesday, January 11th. It is Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting today for Allison Footer on the Rangers podcast. As always, we're joined by Rangers reporter T.R. Sullivan. T.R., thank you for the time. And T.R., I know that recently you and the other beat reporters for MLB.com were assigned with giving some bold predictions for your respective clubs. So with that in mind, I kind of want to lay out about a half dozen or so, not predictions so much as projections for this Ranger team coming off an AL West title in 2016 and a playoff appearance. Want to get your thoughts on how they may look, how things may shake out in 2017. So, TR, I want to start with this one as we focus on Yu Darvish. The projection is Yu Darvish is healthy all season. That's the hope. And if he's healthy, he leads the American League in strikeouts in 2017. What do you think about that?
Well, he doesn't have to stay healthy all year to lead the American League in strikeouts. I mean, this guy averaged 11.8 strikeouts per nine innings last year, over 100 innings. You know, I think the leader was Chris Archer at 10.84 among the qualifiers. I think there's a good chance that Darvish will be healthy the full year. He's going into his free agent year. He's motivated. I think he's learned a lot about conditioning and how to pitch and how to prepare himself. And I think Rangers are expecting a monster year from him, and I think there's a good chance that will happen.
Yeah, I think it's kind of easy to forget now just how dominant he has been and can be, assuming full health. And TR, is there any reason to think he won't be completely healthy by opening day, or is it all systems go right now after some setbacks and some difficulties last season?
It's all systems go. He's been working out. The Rangers have been getting good reports. There should be no problems with Yu Darvish going into spring training.
And that would be quite a dynamic combination at the top of that rotation, along with Cole Hamels, if Yu can get back to the pitcher we know that he can be, health-wise, certainly. TR, projection number two, Mike Napoli becomes a Texas Ranger for the third time. What do you think?
Well, I thought it would happen by now. The longer it goes, I don't know. I'm starting to wonder, but I still think there's a very good chance of that. He wants to be here. The Rangers want him here. There's a definite need for Napoli to be here. I think the Rangers right now probably only want to go 1 year. Certainly Napoli would like a multi-year contract. They haven't got together yet on it. I think they're still working on it. Still 4 weeks to go before spring training. My guess it'll get done, but the longer it goes, the more you have to wonder about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought this would have gotten done at least a couple of weeks ago, but so far nothing on that front. And TR, you know, with Napoli still out there for the taking, and with Mitch Moreland, who won a Gold Glove, now a member of the Red Sox, what is the plan right now at first base?
Well, I think they're looking at Joey Gallo, Ryan Rua, and Jurickson Profar. Certainly Gallo has the highest upside for a first baseman with his power potential. Rua has shown he's a very professional hitter. Profar has shown he's been very adaptable to first base. He has a great baseball IQ. You know, I still think the Rangers would like him maybe as their super utility guy rather than being an everyday first baseman. I think right now, going into it, I think it's Gallo and Rua, but I still think the Rangers will at least get a veteran hitter to at least help out. It may not be a frontline guy like Mike Napoli, but it could be a guy who gives them some depth. Maybe, well, actually they signed Ike Davis right at the beginning of the spring training. There are a lot of guys out there like that. I mean, Logan Morrison, James Loney, you know, just a ton of guys that they can choose from. I think they'll at least get some veteran depth, if not an actual frontline guy like Napoli or Mike Trumbo.
Yeah, again, not a marquee name, but there are some guys out there who aren't marquee names that you could bring into the fold. We'll see what the plan is for the Rangers. And TR, you mentioned Joey Gallo, and that takes me to projection number three. Is 2017 the year that Gallo figures it out, puts it all together, and fulfills that tremendous promise?
That's a pretty tall order because he's got tremendous promise, and he still has a lot to work on as far as just pitch selection and play discipline, things like that. I think this guy has a very good baseball aptitude. He has great desire. He wants it badly. I think that he's definitely going to give it a run. I don't know. The Rangers have talked about him maybe needing more time in the minor leagues. He's had a lot of time already. I think Gallo, if he's been 500 at-bats, will show a lot of progress. I don't know if he'll be, you know, the huge power guy that they need in the middle of the order, but I think he could hold his own for a full season. But there's going to be a lot of strikeouts and a lot of ups and downs.
And I'm curious to know your thoughts on the strikeouts. Is that the most troubling part to the Rangers brass, you know, the constant whiffs? I mean, I know that's not exclusive to him. A lot of young guys, even some veteran guys, that's part of their game. Or is it more a matter of plate discipline and pitch recognition aside from the strikeouts? What do you think?
Yeah, pitch recognition, plate discipline, just having a good plan going up every time up, you know, knowing the pitcher, knowing the situation, knowing what he needs to do to have a successful at-bat, whether it's hit a home run or sacrifice fly or just get a runner over or just or use the opposite field. There's just so many things going into being a great major league hitter. And Gallo has shown at times that he's been able to do that. He had a great spring training last year, really had a good plan, really worked on it, really showed the ability to, you know, wait for his pitch, recognize his pitch, use the opposite field, all of those things you have to do. But, you know, again, it comes down to doing it for 500 at-bats. You know, every hitter goes through streaks. You know, even the veteran hitters like Mitch Moreland, he always would get into a pull happy mode, and that would drive the Rangers crazy. It's just being able to do it for a full season, have the confidence to do it, have the mindset to do it, not let yourself get down if you struggle a little bit. You know, just stay with what you're doing and trust in yourself. I mean, I know all those are – you know, stuff that people say all the time, but that's what makes a great hitter. It's just every time you go up there, like a Michael Young, the guy never gave away the bat. Every time he went up there, he had a good plan. He had a good approach. He trusted himself. He believed in himself, and more often than not, he delivered. It's just being able to do that for a full season, have the mental strength to be able to do it for the full season, have the mental confidence to do it for a full season.
Yeah, I think, you know, fans sometimes forget how much of a mental grind baseball is, especially when you're in a slump, you're trying to pull yourself out. It takes a lot of mental strength and confidence to do that. Light tower power, as they say, for Gallo. We hope that we see more of that in 2017. TR projection number 4, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this one. Rougned Odor, after a 30-plus home run season last year, really kind of a breakout year, is voted the starting second baseman at the All-Star game. What do you think?
Well, you know, I looked it up, and there's at least, I think there was like 10 second basemen last year that had a OPS over 750. I mean, that's a huge crowded field. You're talking about Altuve, you're talking about Cano, you're talking about Brian Dozier, Pedroia, you know, go on and on and on. Certainly, Rougned Odor is going to be one of the top second basemen in the game. Still has a lot to work on. To say he's going to be the all-star second baseman, boy, that's going to be a tough one because that's going to be some serious competition.
Yeah, that's one of the more loaded positions. You ran through the names. And I think Odor had 33 home runs last season. Was that something of an anomaly, or has that power been in him all along, and this is kind of what the Rangers expected out of him?
Well, I think it's more than what the Rangers expected, but he certainly is a very good hitter. He's very strong. Sometimes he gets a little pull happy, but this guy is definitely an offensive second baseman, and he's definitely going to give them some serious power, some speed. He's the complete package. Still has a lot to work on, but this guy's an offensive threat, middle of the order offensive threat.
Of course, you know, Odor making headlines early last season for other reasons than his talent with the, you know, the dust up with a Jose Bautista. Do you feel that, you know, fans outside of Texas and throughout baseball overall didn't quite grasp how talented he really is because that, you know, that whole thing with Bautista and the Blue Jays created so many headlines?
At one point, yeah, I think you're right. It overshadowed him a little bit. But on number two, it got him noticed and people started wondering who this guy is. And I think people started paying attention to who Rougned Odor is and what he can do at the plate, what he's capable of. So, I don't know, it kind of worked both ways, I'd say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Certainly one of the top second basemen in the game. The competition is going to be tough for second base, but he is certainly capable of holding down that starting spot at second base at the All-Star game. We'll see what happens come July. TR, at the other end of the experience spectrum, Adrian Beltre, for a second straight season, hits at least 30 home runs and wins a Gold Glove, all this at the age of 38, I believe. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this guy still has it. He still wants it. He's still very driven to be a World Series winner. He takes very good care of himself. He's playing in the World Baseball Classic this year. Don't know if that's good or bad. He usually a little slow in spring training, takes his time getting ready to go. He's going to ramp it up earlier this year. I think that's going to be interesting to watch, but beyond that, this guy's still a great baseball player.
I know that there's a lot of debate about, you know, Hall of Fame credentials. You know, is he or isn't he? What's your take on Beltre? If he retired now, you know, does he find Cooperstown, or does he need a few more really tremendous seasons to really lock that down?
Nope. If he retires today, he's in the Hall of Fame. He's done everything he needs to do to be in the Hall of Fame. I think everybody knows this guy's one of the great third basemen in baseball history.
Yeah, I agree. Offensively, defensively, he does it all, and he does not seem to age. So that's especially good for Texas. And TR, to come down the home stretch here, quite simply, do the Rangers repeat as champions of the AL West in 2017?
I think it's too early to tell right now, Matt. I think that you're looking at I don't think Houston's done. Lord knows Seattle's making a trade today. Oakland still has some moves to make. We still haven't really heard anything from Anaheim. I still think the Astros need to do more for their pitching, and I think the Rangers still need to do more for their offense, and Lord knows what Seattle's going to end up with, but Seattle's going to be a very good baseball team. Certainly the Astros, their offense is a lot better this year with some of the additions that they've had, but I think the Astros still need more pitching, and like I said, I think the Rangers could still use a little more offensive help.
Yeah, the Rangers lost a lot offensively in the offseason. The Astros pitching certainly needs some certainly have some holes to patch, and we'll see if Jerry Dipoto ever gets done making trades in Seattle, and then we can properly assess what the AL West is going to look like in 2017. T.R. Sullivan, our thanks to you. Our Rangers reporter will do it again soon. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras. Texas Rangers. It is Thursday, the 12th day of January, and we're talking A's baseball today with Jane Lee, our A's reporter, as it's Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting for Allison Footer this week on the A's podcast. Jane, thank you so much for the time, and Jane, this was a good timing on our part to have this discussion on a Thursday and Wednesday night. Billy Beane making a couple of moves as he brings in free agents Trevor Plouffe and also Santiago Casilla. So let's kind of get your thoughts on those. Beginning with Trevor Plouffe, third baseman, had spent his first 7 years in Minnesota, non-tendered by the Twins after a difficult 2016. But only two seasons ago, the guy hit 22 homers and drove in 75. So, Jane, what kind of a role do you see for Plouffe on this team? Could he win a starting job? Is he primarily depth on the bench? What do you think?
No, I think he could definitely win a starting job, and I know that it might confuse some A's fans, and I think it was even confusing for me when I first saw it, just because the A's have such a crowded infield already, and, you know, going into the year, it was pretty much assumed that Ryan Healy would be at third base, but it sounds like Plouffe could be at third base almost on an everyday basis, with Healy getting more of his at-bats, kind of split between first base. He could, you know, maybe be in a platoon there with Yonder Alonso, and then getting the rest of his at-bats a designated hitter, because the A's don't employ a full-time DH right now. They've kind of always used that spot, you know, to mix and match, give guys some days off, but that could be a spot we could see Healy, which, you know, we say that right now. Now, a lot of things can change, especially throughout the course of spring training. And, you know, a lot of people are probably thinking, well, doesn't that limit Healy's athletic ability? Because he does have a ton, which is why I was a little curious about this move. But I know that the A's are always looking to bring in depth. A lot of things happen with injuries. Plouffe, like a lot of A's players, you know, does have versatility. He's played other positions in the infield before, and I'm sure, you know, that was a big attribute when the A's were considering him. I know that they're always looking to bring in, you know, more power. Plouffe does have a little bit of history of hitting home runs. So, you know, for them, the addition made sense just because it's a low-cost option that, you know, gives them depth in the infield, even though they already do have a lot of options there. And knowing that Healy has the flexibility to move around as well, somehow these things always have a way of working themselves out, and I think that'll be the case once all said and done in spring training.
And, you know, Jane, I'm curious that, you know, you talked about Ryan Healy. His offensive exploits look very promising. In just under half a season last year, the guy hit 13 homers, so that projects to about 26, 27 over the course of a full season. But did the team kind of sour on his defensive abilities at third base? I'm not quite aware what his pedigree is as a defensive player. So what was the story on him there?
Yeah, no, actually, I think they were maybe a little pleasantly surprised. Yeah, he was never considered a great defender, and third base isn't even his natural position. First base is. So you know, considering all that, they thought he handled himself, you know, just fine at third base. Now, Trevor Plouffe isn't considered a great defender over there either. So I would say, you know, you looking at Plouffe and Healy, they probably offer about the same defensively, although Plouffe, of course, brings more experience at the position. But with Healy, you know, I think, you know, you kind of, especially with infielders, sometimes, you know, you sacrifice defense for what you get offensively. And offensively, and Healy was one of the better hitters in all the league in the second half. I know, especially among rookies, you know, all the attention was on Gary Sanchez, and for good reason. But Healy's numbers were very, very impressive. And you look at how quickly he acclimated to the big leagues. I kind of suspect his power numbers will only go up.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think that's the hope, obviously, of a lot of A's fans, that Healy showed a lot of promise. And like you said, Gary Sanchez got the headlines, but Healy very quietly was a guy that really burst onto the scene. It was impressive, and hopefully he can build off that promising start in 2017. Jane, the other signing by the A's yesterday was Santiago Casilla, who will become an A for the second time. Of course, he made his bones in San Francisco, a member of three world title teams. He was the closer last season and the year before, if memory serves, but nine blown saves put an end to that. But I still think this is a guy, he's not young, he's around 37 now, I think, but it seems to me that this could be a very, you know, low-risk, high-reward kind of signing for the A's. Do you agree?
Definitely. I mean, sometimes with these guys, you know, all it takes is a change of scenery. I mean, relievers, to begin with, are real volatile, and I think, you know, last year the strikeout numbers were still there for him, which is, of course, important for a reliever, and he was just bit by the home run and a lot of just big hits. But I see him, you know, turning back into the, you know, the type of reliever that was so, so good for the Giants for all those years. What will be interesting is the roles that all these guys kind of come into. I mean, Bob Melvin has a lot of options, you know, not just when it comes to setupmen, but closer now. I mean, you have three guys in that bullpen between Casilla, Ryan Matson, Sean Doolittle with closing experience. And I think that'll be definitely, you know, an area of focus, you know, going into spring training, just who assumes that role coming out of it, because I know that they do prefer to have more defined roles in their bullpen. And beyond that, I mean, Casilla, he can close, he can also set up, and the A's have no shortage of setup options, you know, along with Doolittle, John Axford, Ryan Dole, Liam Hendricks. And this could be a very strong bullpen, and he saw how improved they were last year, and I think it's only better. Now, with the addition of Casilla, it does give them some flexibility to trade one of the other guys, you know, if they wanted to do that, whether it be now or later on ahead of the trade deadline. You know, maybe one of their veteran guys like Axford or Matson, or perhaps Doolittle, who has, you know, garnered some trade interest. But I think you can never have enough pitching depth, you know, bullpen depth especially. We're seeing just kind of the rise and focus of bullpens league-wide. And the A's have kind of been looking to strengthen theirs over the last couple of years. And I think this could be one of the better additions of their offseason.
Yeah, you mentioned the strikeout numbers. It was actually the highest K's per nine rate of his career last year, just over 10, something he had never done before. He never cracked double figures in that column. Gave up a lot of home runs, blew a lot of saves. But if those things kind of self-correct, then like you said, he could be a real asset for this A's bullpen this coming season. So, Jane, I want to kind of transition from that into some projections for the A's for 2017. I'll throw some statements out there. You kind of agree, disagree, and give your reasons why or why not. And a logical place to start, as we're coming off this bullpen discussion regarding Santiago Casilla, I'll put you on the spot right now with projection number one. Santiago Casilla wins the closer's job in spring training. What do you think right now?
Right now, I would say no. I assume that Ryan Matson will be the closer going out of spring training. You know, I think there's been a lot of focus on Santiago Casilla's struggles in the last year. And I think, you know, first and foremost, the A's want to get him comfortable back with his new and former team and just, you know, kind of get him pitching back to the way he was. And I think, you know, you take the pressure off a closer competition, even though it will be there. You know, I think the focus for him in spring training will just, you know, to be pitching well. And I mean, we've seen it with the A's even, you know, last year. I mean, that closer job, it can change within, you know, the first month of the season. But for right now, I would say he won't be the closer.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment, is that Ryan Madsen will be the guy, at least coming out of spring training. But there's so much attrition during the course of a season. Who knows what the coming months will bring. Jane, projection at number two. If this A's team is not contending by the All-Star break or by the trade deadline, then the A's pull the trigger on a trade for Sonny Gray.
I do see that happening, just because I feel like at the deadline, I mean, he could be the most valuable pitcher available at that time. Just, you know, assuming that he has health on his side, that he's pitching more like his 2015 self than 2016, which it seems all indications, you know, around the organization, they fully believe he will be. And I don't know that there will be a better pitcher available at the deadline, which means his value will be sky high, and I can't imagine them, you know, turning down a good deal.
Yeah, Billy Bean especially, that goes without saying. And Gray had a difficult 2016, but if he gets back to being the pitcher we know he can be, what a commodity he would be at the trade deadline, of course, if the A's are in a seller's position by that time. Jane, our next projection, Chris Davis coming off a monster power season in 2016. Does he lead the AL in home runs in 2017?
That would be a bold prediction, although I wouldn't be surprised if that does hold true, I'm going to say no, just because there's just a ton of competition around him, guys that aren't playing half their games in the Coliseum. Not that that really matters with Chris Davis. It seems like no place, including the Coliseum, can contain him. I do suspect that he'll reach around the same number of home runs that he did last year, 42. But I see him maybe just, you know, lacking one or two to be the overall leader.
Yeah, Mark Trumbo led baseball with 47, I believe, and who knows what league he ends up in. He's still out there for the taking, surprisingly. Maybe if he moves to the National League, that would help Chris Davis's chances. We will see. The next projection, Jane, Marcus Semien, his power numbers are going up year after year. The errors were cut down significantly last year. Still more than you'd like to see, but still, will he have more homers than errors this coming season?
Yes, I think, he is trending up in both areas, you know, whereas the power numbers are going up, the errors are going down. And I see that continuing, and I think he's really learning a lot about himself as a hitter, wants to be a better all-around hitter. And I think, you know, during that progression, the power just kind of naturally comes. And, I mean, Marcus, probably more than anyone on the team, I mean, his work ethic is as strong as you've seen from anyone. So I suspect that the errors will definitely continue to go down because of that. And, you know, as he just kind of feels a little more comfortable in the league, on this team, you know, not all eyes are on his defense anymore. I think he can, you know, be more comfortable with himself as a defender, as a hitter. And I think that, you know, with that, the power numbers will continue to rise and the errors will continue to decrease.
Yeah, that's certainly the hope. 2 years ago was a total disaster. He had 35 errors this past season, 21 to go along with 27 home runs. And like you said, you hope the homer column goes up, the error column goes down. Jane, to wrap things up here, as far as a win total, I know it's a very hard thing to project, but what do you think about 75 games? Do you take the over or the under here?
You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking right about 75. I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I do see them improving upon last year, just not a ton. And that's more a reflection on their division than it is on them. I do think that they will be better so long as their kind of rotation keeps them afloat. But they're in a very tough division. I mean, you see the additions that other teams have made around them, be it Texas or Seattle. I think it'll just be very heavy competition. But I do see them improving a few wins upon last year. So I think 75 is pretty fair.
Yeah, the A's certainly have improved on paper. The problem, as you said, everybody else in that division, save maybe Texas, has also improved. It's going to be quite the fight in the AL West in 2017. We'll see if the A's can hold their own coming off a 69-win campaign in 2016. That is Jane Lee, our A's reporter. Jane, we thank you for the time. We'll do it again next week for sure. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Oakland Athletics. It is Wednesday, January 11th. Matt Wehmeyer filling in for Ellison Footer this week on the Astros podcast. We are joined, as always, by Astros reporter Brian McTaggart. Brian, thank you for the time. And the theme of this week's podcast is projections for the 2017 season for the Astros as they finished in third in the AL West in 2016, but poised for a bounce-back season here in 2017 in what should be an improved American League West. So, Brian, I want to start off kind of bold. After finishing eighth last season in this department, the Astros will lead the AL in runs scored in 2017. Like I said, it's bold, but could you see that happening?
Well, yeah, I could see it happening. I mean, that's a pretty tall task. I mean, I know they've added some really good pieces to that lineup. It's going to be one of the deepest lineups in all the major leagues. I mean, they added Brian McCann, they added Carlos Beltran, Josh Reddick, Nori Aoki, to go along with that good young core they have, Altuve, Bregman, Springer. You know, and they're going to get a full year now of Alex Bregman, a full year of Gurriel. So the lineup is going to be a lot better. But, you know, just looking at as far as if they're going to lead the league and run scored, you know, the Red Sox did that last year by quite a wide margin. And the Astros were about 160 runs behind the Red Sox. So that's a run a game. And, you know, the Red Sox lineup is going to be as potent as ever. So if they can lead the league and run scored, that means they've scored a lot of runs. I certainly think they're going to be up there near the top. And are they going to lead the league? They're going to be one of the ones at the top. But, you know, the Red Sox and Astros and, you know, the Indians, I think, will be setting the pace in that category.
Yeah, I agree. I can see the Astros as a top three or top four team. The top team, you never know. But, you know, The Red Sox have a big poppy-sized hole to fill, and the Astros, you ran down all those veteran bats that they brought in. Of the names that you ran down, Brian, which one has been, I guess, the most unexpected or surprising guy that they executed a trade for to kind of bolster that lineup of all those veterans that you reeled off?
Well, you know, none of them really a surprise. I mean, I think when you look at the Astros, what they needed in the offseason, they needed the left-handed bats, and yeah, you know, I guess Beltran was probably the biggest surprise. I mean, everyone, as soon as the offseason was over, people were like, you know, Reddick would be a good fit in Houston. Well, McCann would be a great fit in Houston. And, you know, they got both of those. And, I guess Beltran was probably somewhat of a surprise just because of the money involved, 1 year, $16 million. The fact that, you know, he's been sort of public enemy number one in Houston for the last 12 years since he left last time for the Mets. And, you know, he's gotten booed at Minute Maid Park ever since. It's kind of silly. I don't know why, but having him come aboard, you know, it was sort of a shot to the system, and the fans all of a sudden were like, oh, no, now we got to cheer this guy. And if you look at what he did last year at 39 years old, had a great season. He's going to be a big part of their success, not only in the lineup, but what he's going to bring leadership-wise. Guy that has done everything, seen everything. The Astros needed a leader like that for their young team, and he's going to be a valuable guy in more ways than one.
Yeah, I think the first time he puts a ball into the outfield seats, the boos are going to turn to cheers very, very quickly.
No doubt.
That's why we're fans, right? That's the nature of the beast. So, big addition, Carlos Beltran to this Astros team, along with many other guys. Brian McCann, as you mentioned, among others. And so, Brian, projection number two, Dallas Keuchel, after an up-and-down injury plague to 2016, bounces back, he's healthy, and he wins at least 15 games.
Oh, yeah, I like that prediction a lot. I mean, talking to Keuchel a couple of times in the offseason, and I talked to him, you know, this week, and he says he feels as good as he's felt in a long time. I mean, he didn't admit it last year. He did not feel good last year at all, I think, throughout the whole year. Tried to pitch through it, and, of course, at the end of the year, took the last month of the season off just because the shoulder didn't feel right. And if you look at his workload from, you know, 2015 when they made the playoffs and he won the Cy Young and he was their ace, he threw over 250, 260 innings. And he threw 200 innings the year before, and that was his career high. So I think that jump in workload really, really took a toll on him. He ended up only throwing 168 innings or so last year. So I think a rested Keuchel is going to come in, and I think he's going to be ready to shoulder that load figuratively and literally. And, yeah, I think if he's healthy, I think there's, especially with his lineup, there's no doubt he wins 15 games. I mean, I don't think he forgot how to pitch. I think he had to battle through some stuff that I think he's put in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, I think people forget how good he was in 2015, a 20-game winner, absolutely stifle the Yankees in the wild card playoff in the Bronx. I mean, how many guys could say that? He is one of the top guys in baseball. No reason to think he won't bounce back. And, Brian, I'm always torn, you know, as you were saying just now about a guy that is clearly hurt. He's not 100%, but he tries to pitch through it. On one hand, you know, you kind of admire a guy who's a gamer like that, and he wants to be there for his team every fifth day, and he plays through pain. On the other hand, I know that some guys, their school of thought is, well, if you're not feeling right, you're not helping the team. Shut it down, get healthy, and help us when you're healthy. What is your take on this? What side of the fence do you fall on?
Yeah, that's a fine line. I mean, I would fall on the side of the fence if you're feeling something, you know, to let the trainers know. But, I mean, understand where a guy like Dallas is coming from. He was the bell cow. He's their ace. And he knows, man, they need me to take the ball every fifth day. They need me to pitch 220, 230 innings. I'm going to try to pitch through this. You know, but at some point when the results aren't there, you have to say, wait a minute, this isn't working. This is counterproductive. I need something to happen. But Dallas is a ultimate competitor. I mean, he would be out there every day if he could. And it doesn't surprise me. He tried to pitch through. He's not the first. He won't be the last. But talking to him in the offseason, it certainly feels like that this rest and the reduced workload this year, and it might be a blessing in disguise going into 2017 that he's rested and ready to go.
Yeah, I agree. He certainly seemed in good spirits at the mini camp yesterday, and he is raring to go and to get back to getting back to being the pitcher that he was in 2015. Brian, projection number three. This is something that I know Astros fans would love to see happen despite a potentially high cost. The Astros pull off a trade for Jose Quintana, yes or no?
I would say yes. I'm not so sure it's going to happen this offseason. I mean, you know, the Astros have been in on Quintana all offseason, really. And, you know, depending what you read, different offers out there. I know what's making a trade difficult for the Astros at this point is they're unwilling to move any pieces of their young core, and that includes Alex Bregman. Now, are they willing to move their top prospects? Yes. Francis Martes, their top pitcher, I think they would move. They're less inclined to move Kyle Tucker, their number two prospect, lanky outfielder. But Quintana's a guy a lot of people are after. He's a left-hander. He's 200 innings every year. I mean, they could. It's not so much plugging him into the rotation. You plug him into the top of the rotation, now all of a sudden you have Keuchel, McCullers, Quintana. You have Colin McHugh, who won 19 games two years ago and has been very steady now for 3 years. He's your number four star. That is a deep rotation. That's a rotation that they could go to battle with, I think, up against the Red Sox and the Indians and feel good. They need that other arm. He's left-handed. That would be a huge addition for them. So whether they're going to get it done or not before the season starts, I don't know. But, you know, they could wait until July, and if he's still on the market, and make a run at him then. But that's it seems to be a good fit. Very friendly contract, four more years under control. I think if they can pull it off, they will try to do it.
Yeah, and I'm with you that I think they may wait until closer to the trade deadline where they have every intention on being a contending team. Get that one piece to put you over the top, and Jose Quintana could be that guy, and maybe he does linger out there, plays a half season in Chicago, and then Astros fans hope he packs his bags for Texas. We will see. Projection number four, Brian, going off the charts a little bit here, but with the Hall of Fame announcement about less than a week away at this point, Jeff Bagwell gets the call to the Hall. What do you think?
Oh, I certainly think so. I mean, I think he's looking like a slam dunk at this point with the ballots that have been made public. He's over 90%. Yeah, there's going to be a drop-off, but I think he only needed to pick up 15 or 16 votes. He's done that, and I certainly think he's going to be inducted 2 years after longtime teammate and friend Craig Biggio was inducted. And Biggio, of course, was the first player to go into the Hall of Fame wearing an Astros cap on his plaque, and it looks like Bagwell is going to be number two just a couple of years later. But, you know, if you look at what Bagwell did over the course of his career, 15-year career, the numbers are there. He didn't play quite as long as, you know, Frank Thomas is the one player I compare him to. They were actually born on the same day, won the MVP the same year in different leagues. Their careers paralleled each other all the way through until Bagwell just couldn't play anymore because of his arthritic right shoulder. And I think if he would have kept playing, you could look, he would have reached some of those milestones, the 500 homers and 1,500 RBI. He was very close anyway, also stole a lot of bases. But the thing that people need to realize about Bagwell is that very heady player, very smart player, always knew the right base to throw to, terrific base runner, not a fast guy, obviously, being a slugger, but go first to third, second to home, like nobody knew exactly where the ball was, knew who the outfielders were. One of the smartest all-around players. You're not going to see that on the stats or any of the analytics stuff, but Bagwell did a little of everything, was a leader, was the anchor of that team for 15 years, and he hit most of his career in the Astrodome. They didn't move to Minute Maid Park and Enron Field until later in his career, so he still hit most of his home runs at home in the Astrodome, which, of course, even though they moved the fences in, has always been a tough place to hit home runs. So Bagwell's got the credentials. It looks like he's got the vote. He just needs to get that speech together, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing left on the to-do list for him. He'll be the leader of the Killer Bees for all those years, joining Craig Biggio, as you said, got in 2 years ago, and he will be no doubt the second Astro elected, primarily an Astro, to get elected into the Hall of Fame. We'll find out officially in about 1 week's time. Brian, back to the current day Astros. Carlos Correa, projection number 5, is voted the starting shortstop for the All-Star game. What do you think here?
Well, I'm going to say no, just because if you look at the shortstop field in the American League, it's a tough one. I mean, you're looking at Xander Bogaerts for the Red Sox, Tulowitzki, the Blue Jays, still a very popular player, Elvis Andrus for the Rangers. Not that I think Correa is not going to be there. I mean, I think he's going to start multiple All-Star games. I think next year might be a step too much. That being said, Correa has the kind of star power that he does get off to a good start 6 weeks in or at the end of May, and he's putting up big numbers. I think he's got the kind of star power where he gets the votes. But, you know, he got, I think, barely half as many of votes as Bogaerts did last year with the Red Sox. The Red Sox, of course, you know, they pack Fenway. They have a great fan base. They're going to come out and vote in droves, and Bogaerts is a good player on top of that. But I think Correa is going to move up that list. He'll be one of the top two or three shortstops from the AL if he's not already, and he's going to start some All-Star games. 2017, I don't see it just yet. I would still think if Bogaerts stays healthy and plays at his level, I think he's going to have the support and the numbers to get that.
Yeah, I would agree. And Francisco Lindor in that mix, too. I look at those three guys as the head of that shortstop class. And but like you said, if Correa gets off to that hot start, you never know. So he'll definitely be in the running. We'll see what happens when the votes are counted in July. And Brian, to wrap things up here, the Astros win the AL West in 2017. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, I told myself I wouldn't pick them to win the AL West until they actually found a way to beat the Rangers, which they can't do very well the last couple of years. But if you look at the additions and the subtractions the Astros have made in the last couple of months, I mean, I think the Astros have gotten better than the Rangers, just with the offense that they've added. You know, the pitching probably still doesn't stack up to the Rangers, but the Rangers' offense has taken a little bit of a hit with some of the guys they've lost. So I think the Astros are a better team on paper. Can they beat the Rangers head-to-head? That's what it's going to come down to. I mean, if you look at this division, if the Astros would have played the Rangers 500 last year, they would have been right there at the end of the year, neck and neck with the Rangers in the division. And instead, I don't know how many the 19 they lost. I think it was 14 or 15. I mean, it was pretty decisive. So they're going to have to find a way to beat the Rangers head to head. But I think they're better than the Rangers. And if they can add one more pitcher, I think they would be a slam dunk pick to win the AL West. But you know, you got to give your hat tip to Jeff Anderson and the Rangers. They've won the division 2 years in a row, even though a lot of people picked the Astros to win last year. The Rangers did. So I think with the Astros, the Rangers, the Mariners improving quite a bit, the AL West is really going to be a fun race to watch here.
Yeah, it's going to come right down to the wire, and maybe Astros fans are hoping they got all their losses to the Rangers out of the way last year. That'll clear the way for success against their in-state rivals in 2017, and they could ascend to the top of the AL West. Time will tell. Brian McTaggart, it's our thanks to you, our Astros reporter. We'll do it again soon. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Houston Astros. We're talking Angels baseball today with Richard Justice. Richard, our thanks to you for joining us as always. It's Matt Wehmeyer pinch hitting this week for Allison Footer as we talk all things LA Angels baseball. And Richard, you had a recent column on MLB.com and Angels.com about Mike Trout, and he's always a fascinating subject because of how good he's been and how good he could still be at such a young age, already a two-time AL MVP. And the numbers you have on Trout, for as good as fans know he is, I think the numbers that you pointed out, it really illustrates that he might be even better than fans think. If you could kind of go through some of his career numbers and the career arc that he's on, it's really staggering that at such a young age, he's already surpassing career achievements in terms of WAR for some guys already in Cooperstown. It's really staggering.
It is staggering, and it's a reminder that when Mike Trout comes to a ballpark near your friendly local ballpark, go out and see him, because you're not going to see many like this again. I mean, he's on a possibly greatest ever career arc after just 811 games. 2012, he started 2012 in the minor leagues and came up at the end. He's got a 48.5 WAR. And look, that's higher than right now, after five seasons, that's higher than some Hall of Famers, Jim Rice, Lou Brock, Chuck Klein. And if he has another year like last year, he would pass Ralph Kiner, Orlando Cepeda, Tony Perez, and be in the top 100 all time. And the one that blew me away, man, is if his next 811 games are as good as his first 811 games, he would then pass DiMaggio, Clemente, George Brett, Griffey Jr., Kaline, Bench, Yaz. At that point, he would have, and if you don't believe WAR's the perfect gauge, he would then have 336 homers, 350 doubles, almost 1,000 walks, 1,200 runs, and he would be, wait for it, he would be 30 years old. And it's just, it's amazing. I took a friend to a game last year and said, okay, look, they have the best player in the game. Tell me who it is. He didn't get a hit that night, but he stole a base, made a play in the gap in left center, and by the end of the night, everybody knew that guy, he's just different from the rest. And also, funny story about him, at the start of the 2012 season, he wasn't sure in spring training whether Albert Pujols knew his name. So by now, Albert knows his name, and so does everybody else who loves this sport.
Yeah, no question about that. That's a name you should know, no question about that. Richard, can you make the case that he has had the finest first four full big league seasons of any player ever, or at least is he in that conversation?
Yeah, we've never had this. We've never had a guy in his first five seasons finish first or second in the MVP every year, and he's on the short list with like three or four others and winning two MVPs in his age 25 season. So what we're seeing, it's – you know, you run out of comparisons at some point. There's nothing like it. And you know, the thing is, Matt, the guy seems so unpretentious. What he is every day, there's no drama with the guy. He loves to play. He loves to put on the uniform. He loves to compete. And the Angels are going to be a good team in 2017. At some point here in the next couple of years, he's going to get a chance to play in October. And then, as with Andrew McCutchen in 2013, we're going to see how great the guy is. The whole country is that maybe doesn't see him every night because Mike plays half his games or more than half his games on the West Coast. Maybe you don't miss it, but he's a human highlight reel.
Yeah, he really is, and that's an interesting point that you made that I kind of wanted to expand on. You know, even though he plays a lot of his games when, you know, most of the country is sleeping or about to go to bed for an early morning the next day at work, he still plays in Los Angeles. I mean, we're talking about one of the glamour markets in the entire country, yet it seems like he doesn't have the star power yet of, say, like a LeBron in the NBA or one of these, you know, marquee A-list guys that are, you know, generational talents, again, like LeBron. Do you find that strange, and do you feel that if he played in another high-profile market, say a New York, a Chicago, a Boston, that he would have that star power that is perhaps a little bit lacking right now?
I think ultimately you have to play in the postseason and play at a high level and be there enough for people to get to know who you are. He's not as interested in being the endorsement king the way, say, of some other players are. He's perfectly content to be a baseball player. So he's not a celebrity in that sense. But you know, one of the things that Commissioner Manfred does when he goes around and speaks to players, he said, one of the things I want you guys to know is I think we have an extraordinary new generation of star players, most notably Clayton Kershaw and Mike Trout. And one of the things we intend to do in this game is let everybody, to make them more recognizable and to make everybody know that they're not just great players, all-time great players, and Clayton Kershaw's on that list too, that these are the kind of players you want to be role models, and we're going to make sure that they're part of the centerpiece of our campaign going forward. So ultimately, everybody's going to find out who he is. So the media part is part of it, but I think it's winning a lot of other things. And the fact that, you know, how do you put in context what he's doing? You don't, because no one's ever done it.
That's true. I mean, he's had an unprecedented first 4 years in the major leagues, first four full years, as we discussed previously. And I know that, you know, you go back to, 2013, 2014 when he was at least one of those years a runner-up for the MVP. I know he lost out twice to Miguel Cabrera. One of those years was a Triple Crown year for Cabrera. Hard to deny a guy an MVP when he does something that no one had done since 1967. Nonetheless, are you one of the people that thinks that he should have four consecutive MVPs right now?
Well, I think he definitely should have had three of those four, because I think, and I believe it was 2012, he finished second to Miguel Cabrera that year. And across the board, when you factored in the impact he had defensively on the Angels, he was a better player. But the thing is, Miguel Cabrera played on a better team, and he the things that you can measure, you know, whatever you think of RBIs, some of us could make the case those are partly a function of time and place. Miguel Cabrera were better. But I think when you dug inside the numbers, Mike should have had at least one more.
Yeah, I agree, and I think I've been mistaken. I've been saying four full big league seasons, but he's had five, correct, Richard? He's entering his sixth?
Yeah. He played 40 games in 2011.
Got
and
it.
Started the next season in the minor league. So he's been up. He's played 157 or 159 games four straight years. That's another part of it. He plays every day. And, you know, I know Mike Socia wants to give him days off, but it's hard to take a guy who loves it. He's a gym, what you would call a gym rat, in that this is what he does, this is who he is, and this is what he wants to do. He doesn't desire to be anything else. He does interviews, he does all of that stuff, but what he is, and this is what scouts say, the highest compliment you can get from a scout is, he is a baseball player in every way you can define it.
And a darn good one at that, and it's inconceivable that we're talking about a guy who's spent five full seasons in the big leagues. He's won two MVPs, and the discussion is, boy, he should have more. It's like only two. It's insane that you would make that assessment about any player in any sport, but when you see two MVPs in five seasons for Mike Trout, you're left thinking, boy, why only two? That just illustrates how amazing
he
is.
Also, Matt, you know, last year the team wasn't great, mm-hmm. had a losing record, and traditionally voters weigh very heavily on players that played on winning teams. To me, that's an insult. Yeah, you can't get into that. You just vote for the best players. And also, you're insulting Mike Trout. Are you telling me because the Angels had lost 90 games that he prepared differently? No, every game meant the same to him. But that's another thing he overcame, and that just tells you how dominant a player he is, how special he is.
Yeah, and like you said, the Angels should have somewhat of a bounce-back 2017, and Trout is going to be right front and center in that resurgence in L.A. Richard, let's move on a little bit from Trout, as much fun as it is to discuss him, no question. But Albert Pujols, batting right alongside Trout in what could be a potent Angels lineup. What is his progress right now? I know that he's undergone some physical therapy after foot surgery in December. How is he coming along right now?
Well, December foot surgery, and he is just now beginning the physical therapy. He's going to be extremely, extremely limited in spring training. And to be ready for opening day, I think, would be a long shot. I don't think the Angels expect to have him. You've seen them shore up their everyday lineup with depth, with Cameron Maven, with Ben Revere. There'll be more moves coming. It's hard to know. He's 36 years old by opening day. Albert will be 37 years old. He had a bounce-back year in a lot of ways last year, 780 OPS, played in 152 games. And, you know, frankly, that's another thing he does is play every day. So the Angels are not confident that he's going to be ready opening day. But they are confident that whenever he comes back, May, or early May, late April, sometime in there, that he is still going to be capable of playing at a high level. He had 31 homers last year, and that's sort of become the book on him. And he, you know, Matt, when we're talking about the Hall of Fame, there are a few guys out there that have already punched their tickets for the Hall of Fame. Albert has punched his ticket, whether he plays another game or not. So, you know, and I like that part of it, because to me, when you see a guy and you know that, hey, wait a minute, this guy's going to have a plaque at Cooperstown, this guy set a standard for the way you play the game, for the way you prepare, and all of that. In other words, it's special to get a guy like Albert, to be able to watch a guy like Albert play. But in a small picture, he's very important in what the Angels hope to do. You know, a lot of it is about pitching and all that, but they feel good about their lineup. They need him back. When that'll be, I'm not sure, but they're pretty fairly confident that he'll be out for Pujols.
Yeah, I mean, at full health, like he had last year, he's still a 3,100 guy and still a guy that's very instrumental in that Angels lineup, and a guy who is 9 homers away from 600, and when he reaches that benchmark, that'll be quite a celebration of his incredible career. He's been special since day one, and we hope for a full recovery and a healthy 2017 for Albert Pujols. And, Richard, to begin to wrap things up here, Garrett Richards, update us on him. You know, this is a guy that was so promising at one time. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, that awful, awful knee injury at Fenway Park, covering first base on a ground ball. There's been some ups and downs since then on the health front. What do you expect out of him, and can we expect a healthy Garrett Richards in 2017?
You know, he's the key. He's probably the key to the Angels season. I think Fangraphs have some projected to have the fourth best record. Fangraphs projects the Angels to host the wild card game in the American League. That's how confident they are that Garrett Richards will bounce back. He had a tear in his right elbow ligament. He has had stem cell therapy trying to avoid Tommy John surgery. The best news the Angels have gotten in this offseason is that he is throwing completely pain-free. And, you know, he's going to ramp it up now in January heading into camp. So it's important. And if he's Garrett Richards, if he's their number one guy, and if Matt Shoemaker is the guy that can fits in behind there, they're really good. So they couldn't feel better about where Garrett is. But, you know, a little bit on this in these elbows, you're in uncharted territory, so we'll see. So far, so good.
Yeah, and that's the best news the Angels can hope for, as we've seen how good this guy can be when he's healthy, when he's producing. He is one of the very best in the American League. That is something the Angels are hoping to see again in 2017. Richard Justice, a pleasure as always. Thanks for the time. We will do it again soon. In the meantime, it's Matt Waymire signing off for MLB.com Extras, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. It is Wednesday, the 11th of January. It's Matt Waymire pinch hitting today for Allison Footer on the Mariners podcast. And joining us, as always, is Mariners reporter Greg Johns. And, Greg, if there's one thing we've learned, when Jerry DePoto is the GM of the team that you cover, there are no slow days. And Wednesday, certainly not a slow day, as Mr. DePoto once again pulls off not one, but two trades in a single day. So, Greg, take us through the beginning, middle, and end of this to where the Mariners end up with another veteran presence in that rotation. Just kind of run the whole thing down for us.
Yeah, Matt, I mean, with DePoto, I can't figure out whether he's a reporter's best friend or enemy. I mean, we always have something to write. There's no doubt about it. And he always seemed to be busy on the offseason, which is great as well. Today, two deals, and really the key for the Mariners is to solidify the rotation with Drew Smyly from Tampa Bay, and they also got Shea Simmons, who's a hard-throwing right-hander from Atlanta that they're looking for big things in the bullpen, a guy that throws upper 90s, Tommy John surgery 2 years ago, but came back and pitched for Atlanta at the end of last year, and they think he's going to be a big part of that bullpen. Smyly, as you mentioned, really the key guy in that rotation. Jerry DePoto has been looking to really solidify that five-man spot, the five guys in that rotation, and think Smyly, from what he was saying, is the guy that they've been looking at all winter, and they just finally were able to pull it off. And to do that deal to get Smyly, they had to make the other trade with Atlanta to pick up some pieces that they moved. Malik Smith, a young outfielder that was big in that deal, and turned out he was with Seattle for all of about an hour and then moved on to Tampa. So that's the way Jerry rolls. I mean, he makes deals. He's looking down the road. He's got a plan. And now, believe it or not, Matt says, I think I'm done. Jerry says he thinks he's done, and then we'll see if we take him at his word. But he likes his team. He likes what he's got set up here over the winter.
Well, I think we'll all believe that when we see it, right, when it comes to Jerry DePoto, you know, wheeling and dealing with the best of them. So Drew Smyly is the guy that they get in the end to, kind of fortify that rotation. A couple days ago, they got Yovani Gallardo from the Orioles in a separate deal. So as far as Smyly goes, Greg, I know he's coming off kind of a down 2016, but he's put up good numbers in the past. He's got a good pedigree. The stuff is certainly there. What is it in particular that Jerry DePoto likes about Smyly, and what do you think he slots into this rotation? Is he a three behind King Felix and Hisashi? What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's three or four. I think you got to look at Paxton probably coming back as the three going into this thing. But I don't know if it matters once you start rolling out there. You need, you know, really four and five of those guys. You know, I mean, they're going to pitch just as much as the one, twos, and threes. So I think he's probably, you know, the three or four guy. And Jerry really, really loves the fit with the Mariners, a lefty that's going to look good in Safeco Field. He's a fly ball pitcher. And if you look at the other moves, you know, this is all kind of part of the puzzle. You know, going out and getting Jerod Dyce and now looking at an outfield with a lot of speed with Dyce and Leonis Martin and young guy they really like in Mitch Haniger they picked up in another deal. These are guys that all have played center field, and they're going to have guys out there that are covering a lot of ground. And you get a fly ball pitcher like Smiley, who's certainly proven to be effective in the past. As you mentioned, didn't have a great year last year, but closed very strong, had a big finish, one of the better pitchers in the league down the stretch. You know, this is a guy that they really like, they really targeted, and feel like he's going to be big. He's still young. He's what, 27 years old. A couple years of team control left. These are the kind of assets that DePoto loves to pick up. And one of the key things he looks at, he's got five starters, those five veterans you just mentioned, all under team control for 2 years or more. So, you know, this is a rotation not only built for but this year, but down the road.
Yeah, excellent point there. And, Greg, I'm kind of intrigued about Shea Simmons, the guy that they got from the Braves in the first deal on Wednesday to kind of fortify that bullpen. Is he being looked at as a guy that could maybe replace the void left by Carson Smith? I know that, you know, he underwent TJ surgery and barely pitched for the Red Sox last season after he was acquired in the Wade Miley deal. But is he kind of a guy that can fill that role potentially? Because I'm not quite sure if they had a guy that kind of took over that setup role as dominantly as Carson Smith had done it.
Well, you know, really, DePoto's remade this bullpen so many times, it's kind of hard to say he's replacing that guy. I mean, because they have, I mean, Edwin Diaz they brought up and you know, Shuti became the closer last year, outstanding arm, and set up guys, Dan Altavilla, another young guy they brought up from AA last year, that fits into kind of that same mold as Carson Smith and now Simmons. I mean, these are kids that throw upper 90s, throw hard, and big, young, upside guys. You know, they've also got Steve Cishek coming back, who I think comes into, you know, would be your natural setup guy now that he got replaced by Diaz in the closer role, although Cishek with hip surgery may not be ready for the start of the season. So, the bullpen, you put Simmons in there, they really got added some depth. I think that bullpen could be a real strength. You know, they picked up Mark Krzyzewski to be the lefty setup guy, and now with adding the rotation depth, they've got Ariel Miranda, a lefty that they really like. They'll probably slide in there to be a lefty, kind of in the Mike Montgomery role of last year, that can be a long guy, can start if needed, you know, and really be an effective addition there as well. Evan Scribner, another guy, Nick Vincent. I mean, these are veterans they got in there. Really some good depth, some really quality bullpen arms. And as we've seen around baseball, and building a bullpen is as big as anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as important, if not more important, than the guys you have starting games. It seems to be get your guy through five, turn it over to the pen for a 6-9 and get yourself a W. So that's baseball here in 2017.
Yeah.
And Smiley, the headliner in the two deals today, but Simmons could be an under the radar guy that could really have a big presence in that Seattle bullpen for the upcoming season. We will see. So a busy day for the Mariners once again on the trade front. Jerry DePoto working the phones as always, and Greg, in the time we have left, I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on some projections for the Mariners in the 2017 season, as we kind of just, you know, throw things out there based on performance or underperformance last year and see if guys can maybe bounce back a little bit or maintain the status quo if they were coming off a good season in 2016. So, Greg, with that in mind, I want to start off with the man, King Felix, a down year by his standards in 2016. Does he bounce back this season and win at least 15 for the M's?
15 wins. That's a good line. I mean, you look at Felix over his career, as good a pitcher he's been. He's only won 15 games three times, two out of the last 3 years. But this is a better team, I think, than a lot of those teams that he was on pitching well and not racking up wins. So wins always a tough barometer. I think if he pitches 190 innings or more, which he's always done, in fact, 10 years in a row until he got hurt last year, then yeah, I think he's a 15-game winner. I think the key is to keep him healthy. Whether he can stay healthy or not, I think it's probably the million-dollar question. But if I had to set a line on Felix, sure, 15 wins, that sounds like a doable achievement if he's healthy, and that's the expectation, of course.
Yeah, and he's still a young guy. I don't think he's 30 yet, or maybe just turned 30, but a lot of miles on the arm, and it'll be an interesting 2017 season for Felix Hernandez. We'll see what transpires. Greg, projection number two, and given some of the acquisitions Seattle has made this offseason, I wanted to get your opinion on this. The Mariners finished 24th in the majors out of 30 teams in stolen bases last season. Do they crack the top 10 this season?
They were a team that wanted to run last year, Matt, and just didn't have the pieces, and I think there's no question they jumped into the top 10 last year, if not a lot higher. They stole 56 bases last year, and that was not what they were looking to do. Scott Service, a guy that really wants to push that envelope, which is why you see Gerard Dyson, a guy who stole 30 bags last year, and Gene Segura, the shortstop, 33 bags. So you add those two guys together, that's 63 bases that they didn't have last year. You got Leonis Martin as well. And I think your top 10 in MLB is around 100 stolen bases in a season. I think they easily cracked that with those three guys. Segura, Dyson, and Martin combined for 87 bags last year between them. So, you know, they got some other guys they think can run as well. Haniger's guy, a good athlete. Ben Gamble's going to be playing some. I think they easily cracked that top 10. It'd be fun to watch. This would be a different looking team next year.
Yeah, I agree. They're going to give catchers a lot of agita behind home plate pretty much all season. You mentioned the guys, you know, Martin, Segura, Gerard Dyson, too. They could be a fun team to watch on the base paths in 2017. Greg, projection number three, you've mentioned Edwin Diaz briefly. Does he record a higher Ks per nine figure this season than Aroldis Chapman?
That's a great question. He did last year, which is really saying something. He was dynamite out of the box. I mean, he was striking out as close to two batters an inning when he came in. Those numbers kind of declined as he went along. His arm got a little tired. He finished ahead of Chapman. I guess if I was a betting man, I'd probably go with Chapman to win that battle with Diaz pitching over a full season. But that's going to be a heck of a thing to watch. Edwin Diaz was electric last year, and you know, a young kid, 22, that throws upper 90s with just a wipeout slider. I mean, he's going to be something to watch. I'm not going to bet against Aroldis Chapman if you want to put me on the line with my money, but I think that's going to be a pretty fun one to watch. Those guys strike out a whole lot of guys.
Yeah, they sure do. And you mentioned that Diaz did eclipse Chapman last season. Obviously, Chapman had the much larger workload, but for what it's worth, Diaz last year 15.3, Chapman at 14 even, although that number jumped into the 17s during, you know, in his time with the Cubs. So we will see what happens over a full season for both guys here in 2017. Like you said, it's going to be fun to watch. Number four here, Greg, the last player to hit four 40 home run seasons in a row was Ryan Howard of the Phillies. The last one of those was 2009. Does Nelson Cruz become the first guy since him to do it in 2017? He's got three in a row so far.
That's a tough one. Again, I'm going to be brutally honest. Hitting 40 home runs in 4 years in a row. You got Cruz, he's hit 40, 44, 43, I think, his last 3 years. Been healthy that whole time. I mean, I think he's missed, you know, it's a handful of games over 3 years. That's a tough thing to bet on with a 36-year-old going on 37 this coming season. I think it would be tough to say, yeah, he's going to hit 40, but Nelson Cruz has been a beast since he came to Seattle, and certainly it wouldn't surprise me if he hit 40. I would put the line a little under that if it was me, just trying to be realistic. But I certainly expect him to be in that ballpark again. And you talk about ballparks, he can hit it out of any one, and certainly will do it so again with a regular clip.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, the last guy to do it, I should say, Ryan Howard back in 2009. If Cruz stays healthy, hard to bet against him, but we'll see what happens for a guy that's not a spring chicken anymore, but he could still swing that bat, and we'll see if he puts up another 40-homer season here in 2017. Greg, last but not least, the million-dollar question when it comes to the M's, of course, do they end baseball's longest current playoff drought at 15 seasons?
Yeah, the biggest question of all, and what they're out there playing for. I like this team to make the playoffs. You know, maybe it's because I'm sitting there today, as they just made a couple more deals. I like a lot what DePoto's done, getting you know, really athletic and a lot of speed at the top of that lineup in the outfield. This would be a lot better defensive club. I think the pitching is solid, as we've just been talking about. I think they are poised to make that jump. It would be, you know, it's a tough one. I mean, I think the Astros are going to be tough. You know, the Rangers just always seem to be tough, and both those teams play Seattle real well. Angels sound like they're going to be improved, and you never know with the A's. But, I like this. I think they're pointed to this year. They're certainly making deals to try to win now around that core nucleus of guys. I think Cano's still in his prime. I think Cruz, as we talked about, Kyle Seager, I think one of the better kind of quiet guys in the American League. And if that pitching holds up, I would say a definite chance to be a playoff team and end that drought and bring some postseason ball back to Safeco Field.
Yeah, they're dying for it, and they've certainly earned the rights after a decade and a half here without October baseball. They want to see postseason action at Safeco Field here in 2017. Greg, that's a good place to wrap this one up. I think you've earned a few adult beverages tonight for all the work that Mr. DePoto has put you through, and, of course, for doing our podcast today. We thank you very much. That is Greg Johns, our Mariners reporter, joining us here today. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Seattle Mariners.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.